Coming up on All About Android this week, we're going to discuss Google's Android concession to the EU. We've got amazing photos to show off from the Pixel 3. We've got a hands-on with Matteo Doni on the Huawei Mate 20 Pro. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the other Huawei devices that were announced at their event. And Palm has this tiny new phone that we're going to talk about. All that and more coming up next on All About Android.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LastPass. Secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 43,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit. And by DigitalOcean, the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications. Over 150,000 businesses rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 391, recorded on Tuesday, October 16th, 2018. Your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Florence Ion.
Hello to the three of us.
The band welcome is back, Jason. Together.
Thank you. It's good to be back, although you guys reunited. Rocked it.
Missed you last week. That's
yeah.
for sure.
I mean, that's such
all
a,
the excitement.
Such a hard episode to miss. We do this show, and that's the episode that I end up not being here for. I wanted to be here with you guys, but you held down the fort fantastically. Thank
I'm not going to lie. It was a little fun to do it without you. I'm not going to lie. It was
that's
fun.
Okay. It's okay.
I was there for the challenge.
I'll be sure to tell you, though, that the next day and the day after, as I remembered all the things we forgot to mention, I was like, Jason would have
yeah, that's...
Yeah. Yeah, see? So. See, don't ever let me go on vacation. Again,
three brains are better than two.
Four brains are better than three, to be completely honest, because we have Matteo Doni returning once again, and I'm pretty sure sacrificing his sleep. Did you wake up for this show, Matteo?
No, I've actually just got back from an event we'll be talking about later on. So thanks for having me back on the show.
So you've been at the event, which we will talk about later in the show, and they've wined you and they've dined you. And it's amazing that you're upright right now. Is that right?
Pretty much, yes.
That's what I thought.
Who knows? Maybe we'll be talking about a certain wearable device again.
Maybe.
And we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, we'll see if it rolls off the tongue quite as magically as it has in the past. Matteo Doni, of course, techtravelgeeks.com. And frequent guest. Always great to have you on, Matteo. Thank you for jumping on once again with us. We really appreciate it. Maybe I should just say this. Subscribe, twit.tv/AAA if you have not already, but you probably have. But if you haven't, there you go. Now, Victor, it's time for the news.
Welcome back, Jason.
Thank you.
And here's Android news.
That was my favorite.
That's my favorite.
That was great. Oh, it was so sincere.
I know. That's all it really had to be. I appreciate that, Victor. Thank you. It's great
to
be back.
Jason, you were the Android news. I love it.
I had something about, like, still free. It's Android news. Still not charging for it. Android news.
I think you nailed it. Honestly.
I agree. I'll go with the way you went.
But I froze.
I appreciate Victor's minimalism.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're really perfect. Experimenting with some minimalistic approaches to this news bumper. I really appreciate that. Okay, so Hiroshi Lockheimer announced on the Google blog that Google is going to start to charge Android device makers in Europe, so this is Europe only, in order to place the Google Play Store and Google Apps and Services onto their phones. It's the first time they've ever done this. The new licensing fee was instated as a response to the EU's $5 billion antitrust ruling that we talked about last July. AOSP is going to continue to be free. Chrome bundled with Google Search is also going to continue being free. But things like the Play Store, Gmail, Calendar, and YouTube, those are all going to require YouTube. A as yet unannounced... Yeah. kind of strange, unannounced licensing fee in order for device manufacturers to include them. And I think this enables device manufacturers to do something really interesting that we haven't seen on Android, at least not Android with Google's apps and services on there, which is to mix and match, for them to really decide, like, we want these components, we don't want these. Usually they would ship on the OS layer and they'd be kind of baked in and include it that way. Now it's really kind of up to the manufacturers in Europe to decide what pieces they want. And I imagine Play Store will make a lot of those because everybody wants the Play Store, right?
And also for the manufacturers can decide how much more they're going to charge the end user. So good job, Europe.
Yeah, right.
You know,
I mean, you have to imagine that if there's licensing fees suddenly being charged, like, they're not going to, the manufacturers of the devices aren't going to be the ones to pay that. It will probably roll off onto the consumers.
And they're already very expensive overseas.
Yeah.
All the devices.
Yeah.
So
if only we knew someone who lived overseas.
Yes, I was going to say.
Anyways, next story. Wait a minute. No, Mateo's there.
I want to hear Mateo's side of it because, I mean, this is going to affect you. We're fine.
It is, and I'm saddened by this. We already discussed this when the original judgment was passed earlier this summer, and I was unhappy then. I'm just as unhappy now. It's really sad that it's got to this point. Mm. But then again, I'm sure that as all well-run businesses do, they'll find some way to implement these charges, but find a way around it. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Google saying, well, buy a license from us for these apps, and we will do some co-marketing around your device through Google channels, or give you X amount of AdSense credit or whatever advertising credit manufacturers use. This isn't uncommon in other areas of business, so I wouldn't be surprised to see this happen in this instance as well. There's a governmental ruling regarding taxation or rules, and companies comply, but there's always some way of making sure business goes ahead as usual.
Hmm. Yeah, and the other question around, Jason, you mentioned how they'll probably go for the Google Play Store because everybody wants that, but is this an opportunity for an alternative Google Play Store with a European flavor to emerge?
Very well could be, right? Anytime something like this that has been this way for so long, anytime that's disrupted, that's always a window of opportunity for someone to come in and possibly get involved. Although they're going up against, you know, the gorilla in the room, which is Google. It's really hard to compete. Amazon, you know, of course, they can still, companies like Amazon that are shipping Android that's completely stripped of all of this, nothing changes for them as far as I can tell. They're still able to do things the way that they are, and they have shown that they can be at least competitive to a certain degree, so it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Boy.
These changes are going to begin October 29th, so not long.
That's starting soon.
And also should be noted that Google is appealing. They are still in the process of appealing this decision at the EU, so it's possible. I don't know how likely it is, but it's possible that something gets reversed and at some point they would have to change things. How do we feel about kind of, you know, we don't talk about fragmentation or the F word very much these days, but this is kind of that, right? Like in the European market, this is going to fragment things to a certain degree even more. Do we think that's going to have any sort of trickle down effect?
Well, it depends on what the results are. It depends on what manufacturers play along and which ones don't. Like that mix, you know, what is the offering that is available in Europe, and that will drive whether, you know, it could be the license fee could be so minimal that they just all play along and it's no different.
Yeah.
Samsung will be fine. They've got all their own versions of everything anyway, so they could just be like, "Oh, this is great. Right. Well, finally, people will only use our stuff." So that'll be a win for them. I don't know if it'll create fragmentation among people as much as it'll create fragmentation for Google. Cuz it's going to fragment its services across the world, and it's going to have a different impact in different regions based on this. And so it's almost like maybe Google should start thinking about something else.
Well, or
it's going to become a problem elsewhere.
Well, yeah. If it does, like we're kind of on the cusp of seeing some of these moves here in the U.S. Right? Yep. Like this is kind of bubbling up. This could serve as the template for if and when that happens. Right? If the ish really hits the fan, this could be that template, and they've kind of done that work in advance, and this gives them a chance to kind of ramp up and, you know, develop that out however, whatever way it's going to go. So
I also, I guess, I don't know how this works, but I mean, is this isn't going to affect those of us visiting?
No, I don't think so. I think
unless you buy a phone.
Right. I think it's just the devices that are sold in the U.S.
So I'm trying to think what happens when you start just buying. I mean, does that mean that Europeans will have to come here and basically buy devices to have them unlocked? Yeah, the way that we would go to China to buy devices that are not sold here?
Right. I don't know. What do you think, Mateo? It looks like you got something.
It depends. I mean, this is quite an interesting challenge from a question of both device manufacturing, software devices, and how to ensure that particular devices with particular software loads are delivered to certain markets. So obviously, Android is a great platform, and as with all mobile devices, both the developers and the operating system have a lot of understanding of what's happening on the device. So they can tell what nationality the SIM card going into the device is. They can tell what IP address and what's the location of the device is, and they can set up the device accordingly. So it's not necessarily the most straightforward of solutions, but I'm sure that they'll be able to do that.
Yeah.
In the same way that there are different stock keeping units per device and particular variants of devices that go to certain markets and not others.
All right. Well, we made it through an entire story where Hiroshi Lockheimer wrote the blog post, and we didn't even speak to Hiroshi. But
I feel like this is not something we really want to talk about.
Maybe
Hiroshi had to do this. He didn't want to. That's the difference,
that's
really.
That's true. We'll give you a break. Yeah. You can take the night off, Hiroshi. We won't force you to come on our show tonight. Next week, though, we would really appreciate it. Ron.
Well, So last week I thought I'd get to see our good friend of the show, Sundar, but I saw our friend Rick Osterloh instead, who I don't believe we have a little chatty bot for.
Oh, yeah,
but I was on Twit this past weekend on Sunday with Leo in the panel. We were chatting about the Google event, and I was glad to talk about this story. I brought this up, reminded everybody that throughout the entire keynote at the Pixel event last week, Google never said the A word. And you might think I'm saying Apple, but it's actually Android.
Could be a number of things.
Yeah, similar to Samsung, Google never said the word Android in the whole presentation. 9to5 Google actually reported this. They picked up on it. According to the transcript of last week's event, the word Android was not mentioned a single time. Google's done this already with many of its products, like Android Pay, Android Messages, Android Wear. Chrome OS now refers to compatible Android apps simply as apps. Instead of Android, Google focused a lot on Chrome OS. And so this begs the question, why is Google backing away from the Android branding? Are they just do they think that the green Android is maligned?
It didn't work.
You think so? Because that was the big push. What was it with the first Pixel, right? Same but different? That was the whole Android campaign.
So
Same but different came out before the Pixel.
Right.
That was the last year of the Nexus 6P.
I think there was also a very similar campaign back in 2014, which is be together, not the same.
Yeah, be together, not the same. I remember that.
Different but the same or whatever. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. You know, Samsung went through this too. I remember this exact story being a story that we talked about on this show probably like 3 years ago. And it was, whoa, Samsung just had their keynote and they never said Android once. And we just kind of all assumed that it was because Samsung has its own thing and it wants to, you know, distract away from the fact that it's Android, because Samsung gets nothing out of the fact that it's Android, but it gets everything out of the fact that it's a Samsung device, and that marketing has really worked for Samsung. It's just interesting that Google is the creator of Android, yet that's their approach to
it.
But
even
in
the beginning, it wasn't Android. It was Droid. It was marketed by Verizon as a certain... I mean, for consumers...
That was by Verizon. That was successful marketing by Verizon.
I'm talking about successful marketing and the way it was successfully marketed, because when you talk to somebody about an Android phone, they don't think of it... They still call it a Droid, or they call it a Galaxy.
Yeah.
So that's what people call it.
Well, it all depends on whatever their first experience is, whatever their first phone is into that world.
True.
But I think this is less about them backing away from Android and more about leaning into Google.
Yeah, I agree. You're right. The assistant is a big part of it. It's the assistant that does all the magic. Like Android is great, but it's not doing the magic that is being sold to us on the marketing ads.
And that's the thing. I mean, like, Google has a strong brand presence. They've been around, you know, for 20 years now. Stock price is crazy. Everyone knows what Google is, mm-hmm. right? And then so much of that, we talked about this last week, so much of the presentation was, here's the hardware, but this is what the power of Google brings to those hardware. It's the computational, the computational stuff on the chip and using our cloud servers and doing all this. When you buy this phone, you are tapping into the power of Google.
Machine learning.
But you nailed it there, Ron. I agree with what you're saying. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And this is a great segue, though, because Jason, you've been on the reservation. You've been away.
I have.
What did you make of the event?
Well, I mean, obviously, I didn't watch the full event, so I've just seen the products after the fact. And I mean, I've got my Pixel 3 pre-ordered. I got the white one. The not pink or whatever
is the one I ordered.
I assumed that we would have one.
I would order it.
Last week,
it's a little splash of color. This time I wanted white. Last time I did black.
Last week we played the game Rank the Three Announcements. I would love to hear both Jason, what you and Mateo think were the winners of the announcements.
It was between
the Pixel Slate, the Pixel 3, and the Google Home Hub.
Yeah. Oh, like what is the standout device?
Rank them
3, 2, 1.
Oh boy, that's really hard. I know that the Home Hub is low on my list. I don't really care much about the Home Hub.
Wow.
So it's between the Slate and the phone. Ah, man, that's an impossible decision. I think I have to put the phone at the top. I have to say that the Pixel phone is the most important thing. That's the thing that's going to sell more than the Slate. Let's be real. They're going to sell more phones than the Slate.
Yes, indeed.
But I'm very intrigued with the Slate. Like, I'm really, really interested in their idea of like recommitting to the tablet form factor. I want to see how much that changes versus what my experience with Chrome OS on a tablet has been, which has been very hit and miss. And so hopefully on the Slate, they've put in a little bit more work into that. I have to imagine that they have so that won't be... that won't be kind of, you know, step by step as much as it has been for me in the past.
You know what the Pixel Slate and the Pixel have in common?
The name Pixel?
No.
Oh.
Google.
Yeah.
Just honing in your point, Ron.
Yeah. That's exactly why I completely agree. And it sounds like we're on the same page. Like, that's why this was a made by Google event, not an Android event, not
or a Pixel event. No, it was made by Google. Google made some stuff. It hired some people to make it some stuff.
Yeah.
And it did all of the fancy stuff on the back. You know, all the machine learning. Took all that data. And made a product.
Yeah.
For you.
And that we will
use. And it put it in this little shell. You know? And maybe one day you don't want that shell. You want a different shell. Well, guess what?
I want a new shell.
You can go get a new shell. Just go to the beach and pick one up. It's also called Best Buy or... Target. I don't know where
I thought you were going all existential here. That's where my mind was going. Mateo, how would you rank things?
Yeah.
So I'm going to be the weirdo here and say that I was most excited by the Home Hub to start off.
You and me, brother. You and me. Same page.
What about it? And
the reason is that it's very affordable. It's not a true impulse buy, but for people who want to make their home smart and have a window into their Google ecosystem, I think it's a great home product, and I'm going to be getting one myself. And I think that price point is very, very sweet because it makes it available to almost everyone.
$150.
The rest of the Google portfolio has priced itself in that premium category, which in a way makes it inaccessible to many. And I think this goes a bit against the whole philosophy of firstly Android products and then Google products, is that they should be accessible to everyone. And for that exact reason, I'll put the Pixel 3 and the Pixel 3 XL in second place. As far as smartphones go, they're not too high in price. They actually are accessible to those who want a high-end smartphone. And I'll put the Pixel Slate at the bottom because of the pricing. It starts at reasonable pricing, but you get the relatively underpowered chipset. You need to buy the keyboards and stylus separately. So I was very disappointed with the level of pricing they put at that, yeah. Especially in the context of there is competition on a completely different platform with the Microsoft Surface Go. I have recently purchased one and am a very happy user of a Microsoft Surface Go because it does everything I need it to do and it's affordable. So I think that that's my order is I'm very happy with the Home Hub. Second place, the Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL. I was quite disappointed with the Pixel Slate.
Interesting.
Wow, we're all across the map, I think.
Totally. Yeah, I don't think anybody was the same in that group.
So then I guess in that case, Google did a pretty good job.
Hey, yeah. What do all those things have in common? They were made by Google.
Didn't
all those things also have some very nice hipster videos with...
Of course.
Tinkety-tonk music in the background.
Everybody did. The music in these videos is getting to be too much. It's like,
Yes, anyway. It is. But Flo, the Pixel 3 and the beautiful camera.
My favorite is when they put an Imagine Dragons soundtrack to it, and it's just like the most epic, product is being used. Okay, you know what is, maybe not as epic as what the scene I was describing, but definitely iterative, is the Pixel 3 camera. So we've got reviews that went live this week on the internets. If you've been on the internets lately.
Live there.
There's been reviews. Everybody posted their review. CNET posted their review. The Verge posted their review. BuzzFeed posted their review. They actually did a little different spin
on
it.
Matt Honan kind of went on a direction.
Definitely check that one out.
Interesting to read.
Android Central, everybody, all the people. And so now we have samples of what it looks like between the Pixel 3 and the other phones that are out there. So a couple of things to note is that the pictures are stunning.
They are.
They
look really good.
I mean, this dog does look cute. And look how sharp it looks.
I'd snuggle that dog.
The way these go, actually, it goes iPhone 10 is the first photo, iPhone 10s is the second photo, and then the Pixel 3 is the third photo.
Yeah, so that's on the tweet, right? That's like,
oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. But that's actually a really interesting kind of side by side comparison. The first, like you said, the 10, the 10s, and then the third one being the Pixel. I mean, the differences are just. I mean, literally night and day, right?
So like, that's blurry, 10, 10S,
dark, boring.
And that's the Pixel 3, which I'm assuming is using the new Night Sight?
Probably.
I forgot what they're called already. But it's definitely using that new little algorithm to lighten things up in there. Those devil
really
eggs,
good.
I can see them. I can see all the details on the plates.
I'd eat those.
Yeah.
They look tasty.
I'm definitely hungry right now. This isn't helping.
Me too. And I want to talk.
I mean, are we surprised? I feel like I'm not surprised. I expected the Pixel 3 is going to be worth the money that I dropped on it.
No. I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm very impressed by this whole super zoom, whatever they call it thing.
Oh,
that's really neat.
The super zoom. Okay. So I did check out some of the super zoom and in some instances it was kind of like meh. You know, like if you took a super zoom of just like a random shot and you zoomed in, it just looked like meh. Maybe because the content.
Like a digital zoom.
Yeah, maybe because the content was just not that dynamic.
Sure.
So I haven't really studied like the super zoom on, you know, a petal, a flower petal, or a tree in the distance. Like that's, or maybe even a cat. Actually, I wish I had super zoom this weekend because.
Super res zoom, sorry.
Excuse me. I wish I had super res zoom over the weekend because there were two, I was glamping. Which is a thing you do. Uh-huh. And there were two woodpeckers just outside my window and they were just pecking. And I tried to zoom in on those guys. Can't really tell that they're woodpeckers. Kind of bummed. Pixel didn't come through for me in that
they're
moment.
Just blurbs.
Yeah. They just look like little blobs knocking on a tree. Knock, knock, knock.
Anyone else?
I'm excited for Jason for you to get your phone and play with the Top Shot function because I think that's that one stole the show for me at least. And I know that iOS has a similar you know, kind of option because they take a little burst of video and you can choose from that. But like the whole Google AI recommending the best photo from like that, that just stuff seemed mind blowing. And I want to see that in action. So, but yeah, these photos look great.
I'm interested in that, but there's always that little part of me that's like, how do I know this is the best one?
Yeah. You mean how do you know?
You have to trust the sentience of the chip inside your phone. It's telling you what's better than what you're doing. So,
I'm going to throw away those other photos, and I'm going to keep the one that it says is the best. Little do I know, the Pulitzer Prize winning photo in an alternate universe just got thrown in the trash.
These photos look super detailed. It looks like somebody went into Lightroom and went to the detail slider and just moved it up.
It
looks good, but it also looks, I mean, I really need to play around with the phone to to get my own, you know, opinion about it, but I'm worried about it looking like fake. Or like just too processed.
Well, I mean, they've been doing a lot of processing, a lot of AI processing in the last especially in the last year, and things have looked very much so natural.
Yeah, you snap a photo at the viewfinder in the Pixel 2, and then it comes out a completely different result because all that stuff happened in the background before you can even see it. It's just fascinating. Will it really replace the depth that can be provided by two separate cameras on the back? Nobody knows yet, but I'm sure we will eventually find out.
We will find,
we'll find out.
Trying to figure out how I get back to my dock.
How can you get back to the dock, Jason?
Because take me to the dock side.
There's a video mail waiting for us.
Oh, that's right.
Now that the Pixel 3 was announced, Steve sent in a video mail talking about the price.
What you got,
Roll it, Victor.
What you got, Steve, huh? Huh? You talking to us?
Hi, AAA crew. Oh, there you are. My name is Steve Boland in St. Paul, Minnesota. I wanted to ask you guys to talk a little bit more on last week's show about the Made by Google announcement, kind of skipping over the pricing on the Pixel 3. We've jumped to $800 for the entry-level version of the hardware from $650 last year, from what used to be under $400 for an entry-level phone from Google. We're just getting priced out of the market. I think you guys talked a lot about all the cool stuff that was coming up, but that's a really steep price point. And I'm thinking a lot of us are going to be thinking about Android One devices that we might have to import in order to get access to that pure Google experience without having to shell out that much money every year. I think they've just crossed a line. Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
That was my fault, by the way, for not mentioning the price, actually, because I was the one that was in charge of that news item.
And it was in the doc. I put it in there. I did. But we definitely... Without Jason being here to be our moral center, we definitely miss things. And like I said earlier in the show, you know, 2 days later, I'm like, oh, we forgot to talk about that.
Well, and I didn't think about it until I looked at my bank account and I was like, how much money did I just spend? Because I didn't think about
it. I had no idea what I just spent.
I mean, honestly, I didn't really realize like the extent of what I had. Anyway,
Steve is absolutely correct. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And I'm still, there's three iterations of the Pixel. And even though I didn't say it last week, I did mention it with Leo. It kills me that they're not making a mid-range, you know, like a lower cost edition or version of this, you know, going for this high end, you know, $800 is ridiculous.
What was the high end last year? What was the cost?
The high end was...
Really?
Oh, the high end. No, the 2XL?
So it was probably about $800. It's probably relatively close. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it wasn't that far.
The smaller one was $799. It was $800 base price.
$800 base for the 3.
Yeah, for the 64th.
The Pixel 2XL came in at $849.
Okay. So, yeah. I mean, we're talking similar pricing area, right?
It's the $100 on the smaller Pixel 3 is a lot.
I see what you mean.
I even was just like, oh, whatever, I'm just going to do it because whatever, it's all work.
It's a write-off. It's a write-off for you. Come on.
Yeah. Well, it's only so much taxes can cover, but yes.
Well, and not everybody. I mean, almost no one listening is it probably a write-off for them, you know? So,
true.
I mean, the point is
very special case.
You know, the people out there who are wondering, you know, if this is their next phone, that will be a big consideration.
Also, just wanted to say for Steve out there, just a little note that you don't have to import Android One, actually. You can buy Android devices on Project Fi for around $400 or $500. But even still, you're not going to get the same Google Assistant-led, machine-learned performance that all the other phones are getting at that price point. And that is the real bummer because, yeah, I get it. It's supposed to be like a feature phone. And I that was a big question that a lot of people were asking me. And then I was like, oh, crap, I did not think about this because I just, like, dump money. Why does this stuff cost so much? And I feel like the only answer is that it's to compete with everybody else. Mm-hmm. Because it certainly doesn't benefit me as a consumer to pay more. Like, I'm annoyed.
What do you think, Matteo? You're ferociously nodding your head.
Yes, I agree. Obviously, Google have had to position Pixel as an aspirational product. They need to make it that thing that's cool to have. Right. And one of the few ways to do that effectively in the market is to make it out of the reach of many.
Ah, yes. Yes.
And while I don't agree with that, that is the way Google have gone about it. And to a certain extent, they're very successful. So, yes, I agree. Android One is probably the best solution to have that Google experience with some trade-offs. So you may remember a few weeks ago, I had the Xiaomi A2 and the Xiaomi A2 Lite in studio. And we were going through those Android One devices, great devices, but there were some very big trade-offs in terms of hardware, such as no NFC, or you had to settle for an older chipset like the Snapdragon 625 and micro USB for charging, or you'd have to settle for no headphone jack, no courage port. So it's going to be difficult, but let's not forget, companies like LG are starting to experiment with Android One. And I believe there's a variant of the LG G7 with Android One that's been announced and may be coming to the US.
Hmm.
I'm not 100% sure if it is coming to the US, but hopefully it does.
Just a little price history, thanks to Downclimb in our chat. Nexus 4, 16 gigs, costs $349. The 5, 32 gigs, costs $399, $50 upgrade there. Nexus 6, 32 gig, costs $649. That was a big jump. Nexus 5X, 32 gigs, $430. So that was the lower price point there. The Pixel, original Pixel, 32 gigs, $649. Pixel 2, 32 gigs, $649. Pixel 3, 64 gigs, $799. So you got suddenly out of nowhere, $150 jump.
And so what you had there was the Nexus 5 and the Nexus 6. You had a big, that was, Nexus 6 was when they went big,
mm-hmm.
right? The Nexus 5 was my wonderful, perfect little phone that I used for years. Yeah. And the Nexus 6 was the first big one. So that's the big price. Oh, man, and the Nexus 6 phone. And the Pixel and the Pixel 2 had the same price. And if I remember correctly, we applauded the fact that the higher sized phone was stayed at $649, and because it was affordable and it wasn't a crazy $800 phone.
Right.
And now we have a crazy $800 phone.
Yeah, true. Very, very good. Kudos to Downclimb. Thank you for.
We're gonna talk more about Android One in the email later in the show. So stay tuned for that. So
I would like to point out that some people would be happy to pay the $150 extra as a no notch tax on the Pixel 3 standard size.
Mm.
Notch people need to get over themselves. I'm just serious. I mean, I'm serious. It's just, I'm just,
I'm likely to agree with you, Ron.
Just get over it. Oh my God. All right. Let's, while we're getting over it, let's take a break and thank our first sponsor.
Good work.
Thank you. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by the wonderful people at LastPass. And you might ask yourself, what is your company doing to ensure passwords are being shared appropriately? LastPass Enterprise makes password sharing convenient for employees while keeping access to corporate data secure. It even allows for full customization of access, including the ability to set master password requirements, enable password resets, and restrict access when needed. You can configure over 100 policies, access security reports, and create shared folders. You can organize database logins, SSH keys, software licenses, and business information. You can further protect your business with multi-factor authentication. And with the LastPass Authenticator app, a verification button pops up on the employee's phone to guarantee that they're the only ones with access to their accounts. If credentials are compromised, the app ensures outsiders will not have access. And the LastPass password generator makes it easy to use unique, random passwords that employees don't have to remember or write down. Employees can log into LastPass with their Microsoft Active Directory credentials, so they truly only have one password to remember. Data is encrypted and decrypted at the device level, which is key. We know that. Data stored in the vault is kept secret, even from LastPass. From easy onboarding to password autofill, LastPass makes it easy for businesses to take control of passwords and reduce the threat of a breach. And the iOS 12 and Android Oreo autofill functionality makes it easier for employees to seamlessly use LastPass across their mobile devices. When you open an app or visit a mobile site, the keyboard itself will offer your username or password as an autofill option, similar to what autocorrect looks like now. No more copying and pasting from your LastPass app and keeping your password in the paste buffer, which is not a good thing to do at all. So LastPass also offers LastPass Premium for personal use and LastPass Families for your entire family and LastPass Teams for teams of 50 or fewer. And I am a LastPass Premium customer. I believe, Jason, it was several years ago, maybe 5 years ago or so, that you turned me on to LastPass.
I remember that day.
Yes, I was
not
using...
Live on in infamy.
I know. I was not using any password manager, if you can believe that. And now all my passwords are in LastPass. I use it every day, keeps track of all my accounts, all my database stuff. It's amazing. I love their little – the app works great on my phone. The plugin on the Chrome browser works. Everything is wonderful. LastPass, I'm so glad I signed up for it. Totally worth the money. Find out why more than 16 million people trust LastPass, the number one preferred password manager. Learn more at LastPass.com/twit today. That's LastPass.com/twit and see which product is right for you. Thanks, LastPass, for keeping our password secure.
Thank you, LastPass. Literally, every single day I use and love LastPass. Okay, we've got some good hardware stuff to talk about, so let's do that. Let's talk about hardware. Oh.
And now it's time for Ron's favorite bumper.
Yes. Mateo's Hardware Shack. Brought to you by...
Don't mind that one.
To you by Ron Richards.
There you go.
Mateo has one device in his hardware shack. The shack, the power's hardly on. It's like a light blinking, and there's a single device, I think.
Wow. Yes. Wow, look at that back.
So Mateo, you have the Huawei. Baby's you were at back. The Huawei Mate 20
Do
Pro.
Again. Do that
it's
again.
It's two colors. It's amazing.
Do it again.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, this is the Huawei Mate 20 Pro in twilight. And wow. Not only is it hot, they've done what they did with the Panda Pixel 2 XL and gave
cool.
us a proper
wow.
orange button.
That's great. So
this is arguably the prettiest phone of 2018.
Wow.
And I doubt anyone will be able to overtake it. But we can go into that in a bit more detail. So today I was a guest of Huawei here in London. At the launch of the Huawei Mate 20 series. And I'm going to say series because they launched more than just one device. So what they've launched is the Huawei Mate 20, which is the standards or base model of the Huawei Mate 20 series. They launched the Huawei Mate 20 Pro, which is similar but has some significant upgrades over the Mate 20. They then also launched the Huawei Mate 20X, which is a phablet with a 7.2-inch screen and same cameras as in the Huawei Mate 20 Pro. So a significantly bigger, better device for some tasks such as gaming or consuming video without access to power for a long time.
And a teardrop notch, I see, as they are being...
Yes.
Come to know.
Teardrop notch.
I should clarify. On the Mate 20X, the 7.2 inch version of this has a teardrop notch.
So, yes, Huawei have obviously embraced the notch and have made it their own to a certain extent. And as well as that, they also launched the port-designed Huawei Mate 20RS, which is the Huawei Mate 20 Pro with Porsche designs, industrial design, and know-how, adding some leather and some very strong red and very black color.
Very Porsche.
Yeah.
Very Porsche.
Leather stylings. And
they also launched the Huawei Watch GT. Now, no giggling, Ron and Jason.
Sorry, too late.
We've been through that many, many moons ago.
Too late.
But yes, the Huawei Watch GT is their new watch, which is a very, very compelling product, both in its base smartwatch features and specifications, but also in pricing, because it starts at 199 euros. So it's going to be a very affordable smartwatch. And it's the Huawei Watch is wound.
It's wound.
Which is
always
a good thing.
Very good. So obviously, I would say, arguably, many people would say that in the last couple of years, you know, kind of setting aside the designer watch styles, but like the technology watches, the original Huawei Watch was...
you walked into dang
it. The original Huawei Watch was one of the most I don't know, liked designs. Do you and then they followed it up and it wasn't nearly as impressive. Does this get back to the original design, do you think?
I think they've taken elements of the original design and their follow-up Huawei Watch 2, which is a more sporty one, and they've iterated on the internals significantly. So it's a new chipset, it has AI on the smartwatch. So there's a lot to like. And it also has a heart rate scanner and NFC. It's a very, very attractive watch in its own right, without being a smartwatch. It looks and feels very impressive. And in person, it's actually slimmer than I was expecting it to be. It's not as chunky as I thought it would be.
Slimmer for a large wrist or for a smaller wrist?
my wrist is quite small and scrawny, so I'd say it's comfortable on my wrist.
Okay.
Hey, Victor, right. can you actually scroll through that page? Just look at the pictures.
Of them on the wrist?
There's absolutely no women on this entire page. Oh, wow. This is not a watch
You're
made
right.
for me.
You're right.
It's the whole page is just a dude sporting it, and all the watches are super dude-like.
Yeah, they're dudin' there.
Extreme eye roll. I'm sorry. It's just like it's just very hard for me to sit here and be like, this watch sounds great, when it's like obviously not designed for me.
Yeah.
So
now, was Huawei? Dang it.
You know.
There's no way to do this without tons of W's.
It's okay.
Was Huawei one of the watches?
Huawei one of the watches that
one of the watches that created
Huawei's one of the watches that women won't wear. I did it.
Well,
did they have? I guess my point.
Yes, they
here,
had a bejeweled.
They had
a,
one
they
that
had
was
one.
Tailored more,
yes.
And it was a little bit smaller. And or was it smaller?
It
I
was.
Can't remember.
It was pretty.
Okay.
It was like a watch that you would wear as a piece of jewelry.
So why Huawei? Why?
I mean,
why Huawei? Why?
I'm sorry, Mateo. I just needed to point that out. It's just it gets very frustrating when I see it.
Yeah, I can understand.
Why wouldn't Huawei think of the women?
Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously.
Oh man. Just out of control.
I know. Yeah. Why do we always go here?
I know. Where is Daffy Duck when you need him? Or is it Elmer Fudd?
Obviously, there's no Moffedille straps, but yeah. There was no Bunny Rabbit fur straps either.
What? All right. So, so we've heard about the watch. And the whole series of phones, I mean, they've got all of these different categories, you know, small, large, everything. What appealed to you? Like, what was the most impressive to you?
So, obviously, I've had a bit more hands-on time with the Huawei Mate 20 Pro, and this is the Twilight one I'm holding. Two things stood out to me immediately. The first is the in-screen fingerprint scanner, which is much faster than I was expecting.
Ooh,
okay.
Fancy.
So there is no other fingerprint scanner on the device. You need to tap your finger on the screen in the touch area.
Okay.
And it just unlocks immediately.
And that
is impressively fast.
Wow, that looked really good. So does that mean that you have to put your finger on that particular dot on that screen, like that small little circular area, or is it like the bottom third of the screen, all of that's available, or what is that?
So it should be just that particular dot area on the screen.
All right.
And I have tried going off to the left, to the right, above and below, and it doesn't work as well. To have that immediate unlock, you need to do that.
Got it.
And it's an optical fingerprint scanner, which means that it will work with wet hands.
Oh,
very similar nice.
It's similar to the one we saw in the Honor 10, which is great if you are looking at the screen and you know where to position your thumb. Mm-hmm. But there's no tactile feel to where you're putting your hand.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was a question in our chat.
The important thing is, you with a fingerprint scanner, it's good to have some sort of contour around the area where you're going to be putting your finger. So if it's on the back, you can feel the fingerprint scanner. If it's on the front, it's nice to have something around the area so that you can feel it, that you don't have. But that's not the only way to unlock this device. As well as a passcode, it also the Huawei Mate 20 Pro has a very advanced facial recognition system, which uses a system very similar to the iPhone X and iPhone XS and iPhone XS Max, which is works in the dark. It's 3D face scanning, and that's even faster. I was sitting there setting it up whilst Miriam was also doing hers, and we were really impressed by how quick that face unlock is. It's really taken it to the point where I have the feeling that I will be using face unlock more than I will the finger unlock in the device. Wow. That's the reason for the notch being much wider on the Mate 20 Pro and the Porsche design Mate 20 RS. So those are the two standout features that come to mind first. Then, obviously, there's the overall design. It's a lovely industrial design with a curved screen at the edges, and the back is curved into that. So I believe someone, it was SuperSaf, said this is what happens when Samsung and Apple have a love child. This is really an impressive device to hold and to look at. It really feels amazing.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
It's as if the essentially what Huawei did was say, okay, we'll look at what everyone else is doing, and we will make sure we do better. They've really thrown the kitchen sink at it in terms of design. And also the color options. There's quite a wide number of colors available. Those colors, if you have the Twilight one, such as the one that I have, it's a plain glass back, but the other ones have a certain laser etching to them, so that they're much easier to hold. They don't slip around as much, and fingerprints aren't as visible on them. So, as far as industrial design goes, it's really impressive. And at the back, one of the biggest features of the industrial design is that four-dot design module. And when I say four-dot camera module, I mean there's this square with four dots in it. One is a dual-tone LED flash, and there's three cameras in it. One's a 40-megapixel color camera. The other's a 20-megapixel color camera. And then there's an 8-megapixel depth sensor. This differs from the Huawei P20 Pro because there's no monochrome sensor. That means that the MUI software and the Huawei camera software can play with some other features. And the main things that come from this are you have the option to go wide angle with a 20 megapixel sensor. So they've essentially put the wide angle lens into it. And in the UX for the camera, so the UI you use to control the camera, you can go from 0.6 optical zoom to 5x lossless lossless digital zoom, passing by 3x optical zoom.
And did they explain, because I know Huawei has their own, you know, their own Kirin chips in there that are doing a lot of AI crunching, similar to what Google's doing, and largely defining Google's, you know, Pixel photo experience and the results that we're getting there. That's pretty much similar to what Huawei's doing, right?
It is. So what they have is obviously their own Kirin 980 chipset. This is a brand new 7-nanometer chipset, which means the transistors are even smaller. The device becomes much more efficient,
yeah,
and it's able to process more information with less power. So this has two NPUs, or neural processing units. It means that there's two dedicated chips for AI, such as scene recognition, handling multiple exposures and blending them into HDR, or to identify issues such as low light and engage Huawei's night mode.
Yeah.
So the night modes that I've tested this on is really, really impressive. The Mate 20 Pro is a step up from the P20 Pro, which was already an excellent camera phone. So all this industrial design, chipset, cameras, is powered by MUI 9. That's Huawei's Android distribution based on Android 9 Pi. So Google was on stage at this launch saying how important the Huawei partnership is to them. This is one of the first devices launched with Android Pi on it, and they were very happy about it.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are lots of benefits to that around security. So the Mate series is also aimed at enterprise, much like the Samsung Note series. And they went through all the benefits of Android Pi that are implemented in MUI 9. This is another, thanks for showing, Victor. This is another example of one of the features of the camera. Because they have the wide-angle lens and the amazing camera setup with Leica lenses, they can do macro photography. You can be up to 2.5 centimeters from an object, and you can zoom in on the detail of the cogs of that watch.
That's great.
I deliberately took this one with light reflection on the glass to that watch mechanism, because you can see how well and naturally the camera software has handled that.
Wow. I mean, that looks really good. There's a lot of detail in there. And I feel like macro has really kind of fallen to the wayside. I feel like on camera phones.
It's all about groupies, man.
Yeah, exactly. They've gone wider, and macro comes in really handy on some pictures. And I always wish that I had better macro performance on my phones.
Me too.
Yeah.
Zoom in on whip.
Zoom in on that.
Oh, look whoa, there we go.
Wow,
whoa,
look at that. Whoa. That's really impressive.
Look at that detail. That's crazy.
Dang. Whoa. That looks really nice.
So question yourself, do you really need that magnifying glass anymore?
Yeah.
Apparently not.
That's a good point, yeah.
So, okay, well, this is really impressive. And, you know, again, probably worth pointing out, Huawei in the States has maybe less of a presence, but everywhere else in the world, Huawei is ginormous. I mean, one of the biggest phone makers in the world. So these events, I feel like, get less play here in the States and less attention and everything. That doesn't detract from its importance. These phones are a really big deal.
I think if Huawei were sold here more mainstream, or I guess more widely, I mean, they would be the biggest competitor that Google has in terms of AI.
Yeah, apparently.
AI cameras.
You're right. Yeah.
Not to mention that their interface, like I just know from some people in my life, like their interface tends to attract the people who don't really want like an Apple product, but want the performance of one.
Hmm.
And so, you know, they've got that niche going for them.
Yeah. Interesting.
Wow.
So you, to use young person's language, are you saying Huawei would be woke?
Move on.
All right.
Okay,
we may have killed that.
if you go back a bit, Victor, there's some pictures I can.
I don't know if we'll allow Matteo after that.
Wait till we get to the section, Ron. So if we go back a few, I'll just explain some which I was really impressed with. So there's a selfie with Miriam and I.
Yeah.
Where there's some challenging lighting conditions. So there's lighting right behind us, which with most selfie cameras would struggle to pick up the people in the forefront because of that lighting. And if you go forward one, there's one with me with all the lighting behind me, and it still manages to see my face, which is impressive as far as that. And that's, again, computational photography at work. It took multiple exposures, blended them, understood what was in the foreground, what was in the background, and came out with a usable picture. I tried taking the same picture on my BlackBerry Key 1, and it was unusable. I was completely in the dark in that context.
You're in the dark, going, yeah.
If you go forwards one of the things I wanted to show is this is using wide-angle lens. This is what you see at 0.6 times zoom. And then the next view is increased zoom. This is one time zoom. And this is three times optical zoom, so completely lossless. And then the next one further in is five times lossless digital zoom.
Looks pretty good. And you see a little bit of softening, mm-hmm. but it looks pretty good.
Yeah. It's still, you can still read the sign where you couldn't do so in the original two shots.
Absolutely.
So that gives you an idea of the range of it. And so I was really impressed by that.
Right on.
Cool. And so moving on, there's another few examples I have there. So this is something quite freaky, which was I hope it was purely to give us a chance to use that wide-angle lens. They had some very shiny costumed ladies on stilts walking around the party floor.
Of course they did.
And it was really quite impressive. In, again, very low-light conditions with very bright light sources on stage and behind us, it was a good way for them to capture how good these cameras are in challenging light conditions. And here you see Michael Fisher, Super Saf, and myself. We were just about to take a selfie, and scary lady in stilts and shiny dress turned up, and we were all a bit shocked.
It's not every day that happens, you know?
But this is an example of really low-light picture, and it handled it gracefully. You can actually see Michael Fisher's impeccably groomed facial hair and hair.
I mean, you kind of can. so are you going to be posting a full review of this on Tech Travel Geeks, or where can people find kind of your full write-up on this?
Yes, so you can see the... I've already done the unboxing that's visible on the Tech Travel Geeks YouTube channel. Over the next few weeks, I'll be going in-depth in the camera, day-to-day use of the device. I'll be getting used to the in-screen fingerprint reader and face unlock, and covering that on Tech Travel Geeks. So yes, TechTravelGeeks.com and the Tech Travel Geeks YouTube channel. And I think there's some initial impressions out from all some other friends of the show. So yeah. As we saw, Michael Fisher was there. Miriam was at the launch as well, and she seemed to be very positively impressed by the Mate 20 Pro.
Yeah, really
just
nice.
A quick note: everyone who was there that I knew was a bit disappointed that the Mate 20X, that's the 7.2-inch version of the Mate, wasn't coming to their market, because this is the one with the lowest price point, the biggest battery, and the biggest gaming and media consumption credentials, as in the spec sheet is really impressive for that. And it's a nice big screen. It's an OLED screen. So that's the only slightly less positive note of this event. To wrap things up, I'd say for this launch, there are two things to take away. One, Huawei have learned over the last few years, and they now have a really, really polished way of presenting and launching products. In this case, a whole series of products. And the other is, they were not afraid to go feature by feature of their new smartphone and compare it to Apple products and to Samsung products. And they then summed up their presentation saying, we have the best smartphone now. And I think the consensus in the group of people at the launch and other people I've spoken to online since is that Huawei have thrown it out of the ballpark with this one.
Yeah, it looks really nice. I can't wait to get one kind of in the studio so we can see it firsthand and paw at it a little bit, check out kind of its
picture taking capabilities. I'm
the
so jealous.
Amazing.
I'm jealous of you, Mateo.
Yeah, Twilight is amazing in of itself, but so is that little red button.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the red button too. I like the whole thing, the whole package.
Yeah, you know Ron and his bling. Ron's a big fan of bling.
So much bling.
You know, I am.
You know what doesn't have as much bling but makes a great gaming phone is actually another phone release that came out in this onslaught of phones that are getting launched now, I guess. And actually, this one, it costs as much as the Pixel 3. So it is the Razer Phone 2. Yes, this gaming phone is out. People have been talking about this for a while. It's got a 5.7-inch IGZO LCD display with a 120Hz refresh rate, which is crazy fast. Yeah. Snapdragon 845, Adreno 630 GPU, and 8 gigs of memory packed into this little package. It's got vapor chamber cooling system, which sounds like something you'd put into your PC, and which is exactly why it sounds like that.
Or your car.
Yeah. It's got a Dolby Atmos certified audio, 23-bit DAC, dual front-facing speakers, which is something that is becoming more standard these days, thankfully, for those of us media junkies. This is a gaming phone, of course. 4,000 milliamp battery with quick charge, 4+ support. Holy specs, Batman. Mirror glass back with light up logo, just like the Razer mice that you may have and the other peripherals hanging around your home. It matches my PC. You could set it up to 16.7 million colors, including a breathing color mode or a spectrum mode that switches through colors, which I'm still trying to figure out how to do with my Philips Hue bulbs. But
you don't need to. Just get a Razer phone, too.
Or the color can be based on notifications, just like the notification light on OG Android phones of the past. It also has a completely redesigned camera. 12 megapixels on the rear, 8 megapixels on the front. Who knows if it's going to be as good as the other two phones we just talked about. But hey, HDR and autofocus algorithms added in there, you know, just to kind of help take away from the fact that the Razer One phone did not have a very good camera. And you can pre-order it all for the same price as the regular Pixel 3. $800.
$800.
And you get cool stuff like vapor cooling and vapor like 8 gigs of RAM.
You'll
and like,
never see, but maybe.
And a backside that lights up different colors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on. You can have a.
Set to notifications and stuff.
You can have a light switch rave with your phone.
Sure. As long as you're wearing that little vibration.
I still have that.
Watch.
I still use it sometimes.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Because I'll use it with the Switch. So when I'm playing Skyrim. Okay.
I can see that. I can see that.
And
Ron, you were the next bit Robin user of the group.
I was basically
the spiritual successor of the next bit Robin.
It is.
Strangely.
And I saw lots of people very excited for this phone.
Yeah.
I saw a really positive reaction to the announcement. I think they are taking our wonderful Nextbit Robin and have evolved it into, honestly, I think they've merged it into the Razer brand pretty nicely.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense as a Razer product, you know, in their larger products, you know, suite of stuff aimed at the edgy gamer. But I think this is a pretty impressive phone. I think this is a neat niche, and I'm still rooting for them. I'm not getting it, but I'm rooting for them.
I'm down for a gaming phone. Good for you for doing something good with Android.
Gaming phone makes sense. Like, we're getting a lot more kind of console quality style games. You know, Fortnite, just as one obvious example, but.
And when we get to our app section, another one that is also coming out is popular on Steam.
But there is a need. Like, there are definitely mobile gamers. Mobile gaming isn't just, you know, popping balloons. You know, it's stepped up in quality.
Or moving Pokemon cards, although it is still my favorite thing to do.
It's got a lot of depth. So for some people, having a phone that's dedicated to gaming on the inside is going to make a whole lot of sense.
What about this other
the right ones to do it.
Kind of phone? Sorry, I was trying really hard to transition.
Oh,
and
then
just didn't have. I was hoping you'd
just,
look at
it
me
just gets
and
worse
it would just be
when
like
you talk
magic.
About the transition. It just gets worse.
What about on the other side of the spectrum, Ron?
A funny story, guys. A friend of mine here in New York at an event, about, I think it was last winter, early spring, worked at a very popular clothing company, clothing startup here in New York, said, hey, I'm moving to San Francisco. And I'm like, oh, what are you going to work on? He's like, I can't tell you. I'll tell you in the fall. And turns out he was going to work on the new Palm phone.
Oh, really?
And I'm very excited for him and the whole team. And it's bonkers and bananas. So I hope you're sitting down. Yep. So the new Palm phone, which is not called the Pepito like the leaks suggested, but it is like the Pepito leaks. A very tiny, tiny phone, about the size of a credit card, although it's quite thicker than one. The new Palm, they bought the rights for the Palm name, was bought by TCL last year. So this is branding similar to the way with HMD Global and Nokia. So it's not Palm, the legacy of Palm pre and all that stuff like we know, all that great legacy of the Palm handhelds. It's just they bought the name, that's all. And it's a Verizon exclusive. They're going to be selling this tiny phone as an add-on to existing plans, similar to like a smartwatch. So if you were to buy a smartwatch that's tied to your Verizon plan, this phone works in that way. It's meant to be a supplemental phone. It's got a 3.3-inch LCD display at 455 pixels per inch. That's running the Snapdragon 435 with 3 gig of RAM, 32 gig of storage. It's got a 12-megapixel rear-facing camera, an 8-megapixel selfie camera. It's got an IP68 rated 800 milliamp battery. It's got USB-C, no headphone jack, thank God. And believe it or not, it runs Android 8.1. It is running Android. It is a tiny Android phone. And one of the function and feature set of this includes a life mode that activates a do not disturb mode and low battery settings. So when you're living life, you can go into do not disturb and save your battery. It's got no notifications, no wireless radios, cell and Wi-Fi only activate with the screen on. So it's totally optimized for being out there. It's a total different approach to phones. And it actually reminded me of the Lite phone. If you guys remember, which now is on the second iteration, I included the link there. The Lite phone was that phone that was the size of a credit card, mm-hmm. that only didn't have any buttons and only worked to call people, no texting, no anything. Right. And now the Lite phone 2 is coming out and they're adding limited texting capability. And basically there's a little phone where you can do less. But it's part of this minimalist phone movement where, you know, get off the smartphone, move away from it, move to a smaller phone that doesn't have big of an imprint and can actually do less and just allows you to communicate with people. So the new Palm, it's interesting. I don't know if it lives up to the legacy of the old Palm, but it's a thing. Bay Area fans, Steph Curry is involved in this somehow. He designed cases for it, like a Sporto case that, you know, you can put the little phone on your shoulder or something and play basketball like Steph Curry.
Know ZTE was a longtime sponsor of the Warriors, by the way.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Steph Curry is creative strategy director at Palm.
Not bad.
Goes
Get
down.
Out of the tech action.
Yeah, so. I know, right? There's money to be made there. What do you think, Mateo?
Speaking of three-letter company names, HTC used to do a little phone for your phone. I think it was 3-4 years ago. You could buy this odd little headset, handset that was an accessory to your HTC smartphone just for making calls and texts. And I think this is, in a way, very good. That was a Bluetooth-only device. But, it's interesting, and I'm questioning the pricing of this because it's an extra, is it $10 a month for your SIM cloned onto this?
Yeah.
Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it was something like that. Yep.
So over the course of 2 years, that extra $240, plus you'll need to pay some extra up front. That is quite expensive for what it is. Then again, the Palm brand may be that nostalgia brand people are willing to pay for.
The design looks actually pretty nice too.
I truly don't think they're going after nostalgia with this one. I think they're literally going for, hey, it's a device that fits in your palm. Let's call it Palm. Okay, let's buy the word Palm. You know, I think that, and I don't know, Nala, I haven't talked to my friend who works at the company, so I don't know what they're, I am reaching out to him, and maybe we can see if we can get someone on the show or something like that. But I think they're truly playing up the, hey, this is a small phone. And I honestly don't know if this minimalist, you know, kind of, you know, you know, light phone, get away from your smartphone movement has legs, because I think I feel like it's a tough pill to swallow to say, okay, great, I've got a smartphone and I'm gonna get a smaller phone that does some of it, but just smaller.
Yeah,
like it is a bit of a tough sell.
It's a very first world way to solve a problem that's not really a problem, and
if
like
you just
a
put
lot
the
of
phone
people
down.
Would kill to have a constant on phone all the time. So
yeah.
So just in that context, I'd say, what's the difference between this device or spending, say, $39 on the Nokia One and just popping your SIM card out and popping it in when you want to have some me time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just
yes.
put the phone in airplane mode, put it down on its face, and just walk away.
Yeah, that works. That works for some people. Doesn't work for everybody. Taking out the SIM card, like, that's easy. I'll say air quotes easy. That's easy for us. That's pretty.
Yeah.
Well, it's
Verizon
not even difficult
users,
for others.
Way,
it's just a. It's just enough of a hurdle.
Verizon
that people
users
aren't
can't
do that.
And that's so,
the thing.
And
well,
this is on
true.
Verizon.
Right. I think they underestimate the number of people that would get this as a primary phone. I actually think
they're
selling themselves.
Verizon has a lot of business people, a lot of business customers.
Yeah,
interesting.
And I think they're selling themselves short as making it an add-on. That if you actually put this phone out, and I bet you they would be surprised how many people would go for it.
Yeah.
You'll have to pay extra for it too per month. By the way, $10 extra, the same
yeah,
as
right,
you would
right.
for in okay, addition that, to the money
yeah,
that
kind of priced similarly
it.
To what like a smartwatch or something
world.
Like that.
It's come. It's
but
yep. I mean, way to ruin the Palm name with something. Kiri didn't ruin
right.
it. That was a little harsh. Sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. Come back to us. Hey, let's take a break. We're gonna shake this off.
Yeah, let's shake it off.
Shake it off. And then we'll come back and do some apps. But before we do, let's take a minute and thank the sponsor of this episode, and that is DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean provides the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications using things like droplets, virtual machines that are a scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. You can choose from standard or CPU-optimized droplets and customize from there. DigitalOcean is designed for developers. It has an easy-to-use control panel and an API that lets developers spend more time coding, which is what they really want to do, let's be honest, and less time managing their infrastructure. Industry-leading price to performance. You can access the compute resources that you need at the lowest rates, saving up to 55% compared to other cloud providers. And you'll always know what you'll pay per month with a flat pricing structure across all data center regions. And you get a number of things additionally at no cost, no extra cost. 99.99% uptime SLA, cloud firewalls, monitoring and alerting, full DNS management, global data centers, enterprise SSDs, an easy-to-use API that developers are going to love. Over 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest growing startups, rely on DigitalOcean. That's to remove their infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. So you can sign up today and check it out and receive a free $100 credit. All you have to do is go to do.co/twit. That's do.co/twit for a free $100 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of All About Android. And now, boom, 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 it's time for apps.
Yay.
And with this week, we have apps that have nothing to do with Google. It's amazing.
Wow.
This never happens.
Finally.
So this is cool. I like this. Pocket apparently has a feature that escaped me until I read this article today. Pocket, of course, is a Read Me Later app. It's the one that I use to mark stories for the show. They released an update. There was a feature in there called Listen. It's a function that will play back the content of your saved articles through text-to-speech. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it was implemented, but it didn't sound very good. It was one of those things where you do it, and everything sounds like a robot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently, they have made an update. They're now integrating Amazon's Polly text-to-speech service. It sounds really good. I thought I'd show it off here, so I'll show kind of the UI on this a little bit. So you've got your list up here, the headphones, tap into that. And it's kind of like a playlist of sort, right? Like these are all the stories that I've saved to my list. And then you've got your standard controls.
LG V40 Think Review, one phone, five cameras, published by The Verge on October 3rd, 2018.
All too often,
Sounds pretty darn good.
Pretty good.
I mean, it's a little robotic, but in a pinch, like if you're marking stuff and you want to drive, but you want to read, this is a good alternative. I just thought that was kind
of
neat.
Or you need a dictation of something, like an article, yeah. you can take notes.
Like the prime example for this is like every once in a while, people are sharing around those like New York Times articles that are like so long, yeah. like it's going to take you an hour to read this thing.
Yeah.
Turn it into a podcast.
Yeah.
Take it to the gym. You know what I mean?
Actually, a couple sites have been doing that too.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of those lately. So mark it in your pocket and then listen to it later. And I'm sure, Bleak's posting another app that does this. I'm sure there are a lot of apps that do this sort of thing. But this sounded really good. Like,
and you already use Pocket. You probably already have 5,000 articles saved from the last 10 years that you haven't read.
How many of those have you read? Seriously, you need to catch up. Okay.
I know I do. You know what else you need to catch up on?
What?
Your Sleep? Plants.
Oh.
In Stardew Valley. Stardew Valley is a really fun indie farm simulator game. It's pretty popular in gamer circles. It's currently on Windows OS. It's on Mac OS, Linux, PS4, Xbox, Switch, Vita. And now it's coming to Android. Well, soon. For those who don't know, it's very similar to Harvest Moon. You just basically got to check in, make sure that your plants are growing, people are happy, stuff like that. You know, just nice. A good, nice little tending. It'll cost $7.99 with no in-app purchases once released, which I quite frankly appreciate because I would rather just give you money up front and have you never bother me again. No multiplayer, though, which some of the other platforms do offer. And there's no release date, but we know it's coming soon. And it is just an exciting thing to think about. Apps like Roller Coaster Tycoon, if you liked playing that back in the day, are available on Android. And so if you've got a tablet, or maybe you're getting the Pixel Slate, this is a great kind of game to think about playing
on
that
slate,
platform.
Yeah.
And think about like Roller Coaster Tycoon. Let me tell you, you put a stylus with that thing, try it. Just try it and tell me what you think.
Okay?
All right, that's tempting. Okay. Tempting.
I know. I'm going to do that right now. First, I have to install it though.
Yeah, don't go down that rabbit hole.
All right.
All right, Rodney,
the next app is one that I seriously cannot. When I read this earlier today, I was like, "How has this not happened already?" Adobe announced that Premiere Rush CC will be released on Android sometime next year, and it's targeted at YouTube creators, and it's a trimmed down version of Premiere Pro. Many features are intuitively and my thing just crashed.
Many things are intuitively. Sorry.
I'm back. I'm back.
Okay.
Many features are intuitively designed for touchscreen environments. It's got integrated motion graphics for titles, lower thirds without the need for After Effects, audio adjustments and tweaks without needing Audition. Is included with the Creative Cloud Suite or $9.99 a month, $9.99 a month. Per month standalone. So if you want to be an aspiring YouTube creator and you're all about Android, check out Premiere Rush CC because this will let you make your YouTuber videos with your phone and the all the Adobe stuff behind you. That's pretty amazing.
Nice.
So
that's cool. And I think I saw that they're getting like Adobe's considering the next version of Photoshop on the iPad to be like the official Photoshop version. I wonder when some of that love ends up hitting Android
or Chrome OS
Yeah. Well,
Or I'll be using it on Chrome OS through Android.
So it's just kind of interesting that Adobe's totally like doubling down on
come
the,
on, Adobe, give me your apps.
Give me some of your apps. No, that doesn't work. Hey, Tom wrote an email to say, first of all, keep up the great work. Thank you. Says, I have a question that I don't remember hearing or reading from anyone. Can I install Android One on a non-Android One Android phone? Why do I ask? Because I am so tired of waiting for the fracking. Yes, I'm a Battlestar Galactica fan, old and newer versions. Android update from LG, Samsung, Moto, Asus, etc., etc. Android 9 Pi has been out for a few weeks, and my phone, the Moto G5S Plus, is still on 7.1.1, June 2018 security. And Asus ZenPad 3S 10 is still on 7.0. Every place I've searched say both will get Oreo soon. Really? Soon, like when my Mets or Baltimore Orioles win a World Series? Sorry, Ron. Says Tom.
You never know. It's always next year.
always next year.
It's always next year.
I think the answer to this is that no, you can't install Android One on phones. I think it's just kind of a thing that a phone is made with Android One. Maybe there's a way to install a ROM that integrates the Android One, you know, OS dump or something onto another phone. But I'd be really surprised if that got regular updates from Google.
Yeah, the whole point of this was that Google would be the one managing it.
Yeah, so I'd be really surprised if that would solve your problem.
Make sure that no one takes advantage of people who, you know, nobody takes advantage of low-end phones. Because a lot of scammy things can happen on those
scammy
phones.
Scammy things. Mateo, are you aware of this? Like, is there any way to install Android One on a phone that you know of? Although your eyes are closed, you're frozen. You may have just fallen asleep. Mateo. I think we've lost Mateo. I think he just fell asleep. No, actually, his internet connection is kind of a little spotty right now.
Let's pretend he fell asleep.
I know. I really think maybe he fell asleep.
Mateo fell asleep.
It's okay, Mateo. We know you're up really late. They wined you and dined you at the Huawei event. We get it. We're sorry to ask you to come back. We'll see if we can get him back on. But I think the answer is no, you can't install that on. But maybe you could buy one. Honestly, I don't know what to tell you as far as that's concerned. Getting the regular updates via Android One isn't something that you can choose to do as far as I know. If anyone knows differently, AAA@twit.tv and let us know. Yeah. Welcome back, Mateo.
Apologies, my phone decided to disconnect.
That's okay.
You looked like you were falling asleep. It was great.
Yeah, you froze with your eyes closed. We were pretty certain that you just decided to go to sleep. So.
It's okay if you're sleepy.
Yeah, we understand.
I am. Delayed flights, Huawei events, scary ladies and stilts.
Let's stop joking around. Let's get you out of here. Let's get into the arena so that Mateo can sleep for a change.
Thank you for the bumper.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, boy.
So cute. They're so cute.
That was a nice shake animation there. bit.ly/AAApoll390 was where you went if you, to the almost dead Google Plus to place your vote.
Listen, we've got 10 months.
That's 10 months where we can really drive it into it. You know, this whole time we could just talk about how dying it is. Google Trips. I mean, You guys allowed a Google app into the arena. This is what happens when you do that.
We did. Yeah, I know. I was curious to see what would happen.
we knew. But there was a lot going on that day.
We figured it was his first choice, and it wasn't like, you know, AOP level. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like you don't get Google Trips on your phone. You know what I mean?
True. That's true. Okay.
So that's part of the reasoning why it was allowed. It's more experimental. It's not.
It was very experimental. Nobody try that on us.
I do have to say, Google Trips is an awesome app.
It is.
I use it regularly.
It really is. I would completely agree.
So that awesome app got the guests another win, which they are just honestly running away with it. The calendar is flying by, and I'm trying to do the math and figure out at what point will the guests clinch it, because I feel like it's any week now. The guests are in first place with 121 points. I'm still solidly in second place with 104 points, trying to catch up. Jason's in third with 98 points, and Flo is in last with 85 points.
I just want to say that I heard from the developer of Kwai Taro, and she appreciated that and I'm glad I brought it.
Yeah.
Because I love her art.
So based on that, I believe the order should be Jason, Flo, Mateo, me. Because Jason missed the show, Flo came in last, Mateo is the guest, and I was the highest ranking person here. So.
Okay, Ron.
Okay, fine, Ron.
The highest ranking Ron.
Mine's going to be really quick because I've already talked about this thing a huge amount of many times on the network. This is the Spire Studio. I love it. It's a little digital multi-track box. I can take it's like eight tracks. If you're a musician, you can just layer tracks really quickly. The reason I'm bringing it up is because they finally released an Android version, probably about a year since I first talked about this on the network, and it just came out. So I have to say it's a little buggy, although I got an update earlier and it fixed some of the problems, but I thought I'd show it off real quick. The user interface, you can definitely tell, like, I've used the iOS version of this on an iPad in order to use the Spire Studio. And so the UI on this is definitely a little bit different, but you can see these are all the songs that are stored on the hard drive right now. In order to actually get into one, it needs to kind of load it over, and it takes a while because
these are eight solid tracks of audio that it's kind of bringing over, and it's essentially syncing up the phone so that it can control all the multi-track stuff that's happening on the Spire Studio that I have right here. And so it links it up. Like I said, there was a little bit of an update, a firmware update when this finally released. Prior to that, I was getting some choppy playback on the songs that were stored on here. And now it should be good to go, knock on table. But anyway, so you can see the UI, the interface here. This is a full 8-track recorded song that I actually recorded in a cabin a couple of days ago. I did the Bon Iver thing and went to a cabin and recorded some music. And I had a blast that night. But the layout is definitely a little bit different. You can see there's a little tray down here that you can slide up. So you can, right now monitoring is on. That means that this microphone on the Spire is active. I'm going to block that out so that it will cut that out so that I don't blast you, Victor. You can go into the recording effects and it has all the effects. You know, you've got a bunch of different amps if you want to put, you know, plug a guitar into the unit. You've got a bunch of like reverb and delays and stuff, pedals, all that kind of stuff. A lot of fun stuff to play around with. Keep in mind that all the actual stuff that's happening in here is happening on the hardware. This is really just kind of like a user interface for it, and it's synced up to it. And then you can kind of go into any of these tracks and re-record. You can see the levels kind of bouncing. When I tap on a track, it's bouncing. I get more information here if I want to trim out some noise beforehand or delete the track or just mute it entirely. I can do that. And then let's see here. And then you've got your mix page. And this is where you take all of the sources and you can kind of play around with the stereo field, this being center, left, and right, and bring it up in volume, bring it down in volume, kind of span it all out. And it hopefully, is it playing? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
We
so,
can hear it.
And you can kind of, you know, you can skip around. If I wanted to like punch in right here, I could hit that and then hit record. And now it's recording. And so I can just kind of like jump in and record and then stop and everything. But I'm going to go ahead and undo that because I don't want to ruin the song. But anyways, I'm just really happy that they finally paid attention to Android. I knew that they were working on it, that they would do it eventually. It was a surprise to me today that they finally got it. And I always love, you know me, I always love the professional audio stuff finally hitting Android. And they did a really good job with this. It's a great start. It is missing some things, though. On the iOS version, you can actually assign tracks little icons that denote what it is. So you could make this a guitar logo, make this a drum logo or whatever. And then that makes, when you go into the mix, it makes it a little easier to know what you're playing with and everything. But for a first version, I think they've done a pretty good job. And of course, you can import other projects. You can export out to multiple tracks and then share that with somebody, or export out to a single audio track to be shared to like SoundCloud or whatever. And yeah, I'm happy that it's on Android finally. It's called Spire Studio, and it's a cool little multi-track mixing and recording interface environment to go along with the Spire Studio hardware. Good job to iZotope for finally releasing this. I'm really happy they did. Spire Studio. Okay, so who goes next? I missed the
I think
order.
It's me.
Okay, so Flo.
Yes.
Flo will go next, and then Mateo, and then Ron. Is that how mm-hmm. it goes? Okay.
Correct.
All right.
All right, so last week Google had an event, but it didn't really say much about photos besides, well, it did say much about photos, but it didn't say anything about that one feature we've been waiting for like the last three IOs, which is removing fences. So I went in search of an app that would do it for me because I'm tired nice. Of waiting.
Yes, I know. This I don't think it's ever going to happen. By the way,
I'm still holding hope.
Okay.
This app is called Touch Retouch. Touch Retouch. Okay, anyway. So, this is a picture of the scenery that I had while glamping in beautiful Healdsburg, California. So, I'm going to show you a demo of how this Touch Retouch works. And so, what we're going to do is we're going to remove an object. So I'm going to tap on object removal. And now I'm going to try very carefully to remove this fence. So first we're going to zoom in. Okay. And then we're going to do that. And just, you know, just like remove it. I'll show you. I'll show you.
Glare.
Oops, oops. Sorry, everyone.
Oh, wow. It's like magic.
All right.
It's like magic.
Kind of like magic because that one didn't work. Let me just show you what I did so far. So I managed to move half of it. So it looks like the fence is just there. I would like to show you one other demo, but Victor, if you wouldn't mind just going quickly through the Play Store page while I set that up so we're not looking at all my photos. So the nice thing about this is it does cost a little money. I actually don't remember how much I paid because after you buy it, it doesn't show you and I haven't logged in and out yet. But it is somewhat effective, which helps, you know, which makes you think that this is something that you would use in addition to photos. And yeah, you can actually export your photos directly to this app if you need to. So the next thing that I'm going to show you is now the Pixel still does this annoying thing where when it takes photos with lights overhead like this, bleh, these come out, this glare. And this lens flare is annoying, right?
Yeah.
I want to remove that lens flare. So what we're going to do is we're going to zoom in and I'm going to go to quick repair. And now we're going to try and repair this and remove it. And it kind of works. I mean, when you get to more sophisticated areas.
But oh, wow.
When you zoom in really quick, you could see it's not like a perfect.
Yeah.
It's not perfect at all, but I managed to remove a little bit of the glare. I think if I popped a filter on top of this on Instagram and did a little bit of like up and down on the exposure and contrast, I could maybe make it look like shareable enough on the internet without all of these. But it's, didn't do that well, but sorry about all the glare, everyone. You want to do it kind of like incrementally to have it really work. But when you're all done, all you have to do is save it. Boom. It's done. It's finished.
That's cool. I like that.
Save.
Yeah, boom. Get rid of those fences.
That's retouch.
What's up, Mateo?
That's really interesting. How do we know this isn't a giant mechanical Turk to power Google's fence removal service in like, Google Lens?
They're like, we promised it. We have no idea how we're going to do it. Let's it's get everyone else to figure it out
manually for us.
Yes,
it's $1.99, by the way. Support your devs. It is an app that works, so if you have like little things, I don't know if it's going to do the fence removal the way that Google promised us it would do, but hey, it lets me touch up some photos pretty quickly. Worth the $2.
Yeah, it's better than the camera app that you have that doesn't remove anything, right?
Right.
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 Yeah. Right.
But it is free and like recognizes all places. Anyway.
All right. So
strap yourselves in.
Here we go. Yeah.
Here we go.
I'm not sure about this one, Mateo.
Go, go, go.
But I'll show it off. This might be the episode where you fall down. Just saying.
It might be. And when you say that the goat might fall down, it's almost literal. So GoGo Goat is an app. It's a bouncing jumper app, which means that you're a goat, you're climbing an infinite mountain, and you need to jump and up along platforms. Branches will break, and you won't be able to jump very high, and you just carry on climbing.
Oh,
and I believe once you miss one of the platforms and fall down, that's it. You need to start again. So the further up you go, the more complex the platforms to jump up the mountain are. The further up you go, the more boosts and coin collection opportunities there are. So the higher up you go, you might also encounter some boosts. And as when I say boosts, there's an eagle that will fly you another 1,000 feet up. There's a jet pack and various other ones. So I like to think of this as...
It was close.
It was close. Yeah.
And the controls to this game are really, really simple. It's using the accelerometer on your smartphone, so you don't even need to tap the screen. You just need to tilt it and control the angle at which the goat is jumping up the mountain.
I'm perfect at this game.
Jason, you're having a legendary game right now.
I'm the best at this game there's ever been.
Ooh, you got a bubble. What does that bubble do?
Got a bubble of immunity. Wouldn't get caught by the vultures.
Holy cow.
Whoa.
I don't want to die.
Holy goat.
I don't want to die.
Go.
I don't want to die.
That was a bad landing.
Dang it. All right.
So Go is free. It is ad supported, so there are ads in the app. But I think it's worthwhile. It's a fun little game to play at airports or when traveling or when commuting. It doesn't take too much thinking, and it's just a fun little game. You don't need to have a very powerful smartphone to play it.
Yeah, it installed really fast. So that's my.
Well, there we go.
That's my.
Yeah,
my additional really point fast. Of information. Yeah, when you install it, it's going to install really fast.
I'm hoping Google Goat can seal the year's victory for Team GG&G.
It's possible. It's very possible. We have to get the third G on, though.
Yeah.
One of these days, we'll get her back.
One of these days. Good luck with that. All right. Yeah. My app, very quickly, I'll do – this is very simple. Most phones now, modern phones, have the ability to – you just hold down the home button at the bottom, and that triggers the Google Assistant. What if you don't want it to? You can change it with Assistant Shortcuts. This is an app that lets you remap the Google Assistant button on your phone to do something else. So what you have to do – the negative of this is that you actually turn off Google Assistant. So you, as part of this, you're agreeing to, I don't want Google Assistant. You're going to move to Assistant Shortcuts, which is fine because not everybody wants to use Google Assistant or use it in this way. And once you do that and hit it again, and you have to turn on the accessibility. So you've set it as the assistant. So go back, Jason.
Okay.
Go back to that. Now swipe left.
Oh, I see. Right,
now set accessibility. And you can turn accessibility on, right? So there you can go there. And now you're all set and you're all done. So here, well, you just went away from it. Go back to the app if you
not
can.
Set up. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I haven't set up anything yet.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm trying to. What? My phone doesn't work.
Whoa.
My phone doesn't work anymore.
Right, there you go. Okay. Now here in Assistant Shortcuts, you can choose what you want to enable when you hold down the notification button. You can enable. They misspelled notifications. I just noticed that, but you can use notifications.
Yeah, it's more efficient.
You can have the assistant button open up the notification panel or open up your quick settings. Or if you're running Android P, you can take a screenshot, which is very handy because I hate the power button volume combination of screenshots.
Yeah.
The classic turn on the flashlight, or you can enable rotation locking, but it doesn't stop there. You could also switch to functions within your phone instead of shortcuts to buttons where you can switch to the last used app or go back or recents or home or enable split screen. Or you could have it launch specific apps. If there's a specific app you use all the time, you can map the assistant button to that app. And it's just one tap and you're good to go. And then if you whatever, Jason, you've set it to.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to use this all the time.
Hold down the assistant button and it launches the Goats game.
Yeah.
Just look at that. It's amazing.
Exactly.
Simple. Assistant Shortcuts, free in the Google Play Store. Boom. There you go.
When you don't want assistant, but you want the Goats game, the Go Goats game, that's how you do it.
Hey, Goats.
There we go. Awesome. It's called Assistant Shortcuts. And it is free in the Play Store. All right, twit.to/AAApoll 391 to place your vote for your favorite app this week. Is it Spire Studio for Android? Is it Touch Retouch, Go Goat, or Assistant Shortcuts? twit.to/AAApoll 391. And we will check in on that next week to see. But we have to wait for Victor's.
Victor starts us off.
Yeah.
He starts us off with. Yes, he wants to remove fences.
Oh, touch retouch. He's all about removing fences.
I'm shocked.
I'm all about bringing down those fences too, darn it.
Yeah, there's a few mic stands I got to remove from some Fair recitals. Enough.
I understand. I understand. We've all been there, mic stands and stuff.
I think about it by like the 17,000th time they've invited hundreds of parents over and they all have their pick photo. Anyway, we've had cameras around for a while, people. Like, think about the parents.
Yeah. Think about the parents. Us parents.
Give them a photo section, like photojournalists, except it's just like a little box of parents.
That's actually not a bad idea.
Right? Yeah. I'll pitch that to my PTA when I have children.
That's technically the audience section, right?
Yeah, that's true. For a recital, it's probably all parents. Let's be real. Mateo, get some sleep. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Yes,
we appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure being back on. Thanks for putting up with the goat jokes and the W thing.
We wouldn't have it any other way, Mateo.
True.
We know that you bring the goat with you.
Although we know
it's not just you. It's you and a goat.
You haven't brought a banana for scale in a while. So. Yeah.
That's okay.
So I'll make sure I do.
All right. Put that on your list.
No kidding.
TechTravelGeeks.com to follow Mateo's review, I think, of the Huawei phone that we spoke of earlier. So you can find all that stuff there. And I'm sure you'll be on once again very soon.
Look
that phone
that
right there.
Look at that.
Thank you again, Mateo.
Very pretty.
It's very, very shiny. I'm really enjoying this.
Don't drop it, though. Don't pull a me and drop it, okay?
Yes.
Don't worry. I've already ordered the Mockadile case. So.
Oh, okay, good. I knew you were smart. Flo, what's up with you?
Actually, I don't know.
That stunned you
in
the silence.
I don't know what of my stories I've posted. I haven't checked on those in a while, but I'm hoping to blog this week at florencelion.com with some updates. And I'm here, and I have another podcast on the Real FM network, and I'm on Twitter at Flo.
Yeah,
I'm just working.
Yeah, you are.
I'm working.
Working.
Oh, I just recently did. I'm still waiting for this to go up. I don't know when it's going up, but I did a story for Lifehacker on using Windows apps on Chrome. So I'm still waiting for that one to go up.
Cool.
I don't know when that is, but stay tuned.
So people should check out Lifehacker over the next coming days, and you'll find some flow goodness there.
I certainly hope so.
Awesome.
Flow goodness.
Thank you, Flo. And Ron Goodness.
Yes, as always, you can follow me at RonXO on Twitter and on Instagram, and I've been plugging it the past couple of weeks. But please, if you haven't subscribed to my new podcast, Finale Podcast, you can go to finalepodcast.com where you can subscribe to Finale, where me and my co-host Carrie are talking about great TV series finales that she's never seen, that I have.
Never seen 30 Rock?
Yeah, she didn't. This week we're talking about 30 Rock.
She's never seen any show.
No, she's seen shows. She's seen some.
Oh,
yeah. But, she's seen the important ones.
So there will never be a 90210 episode.
But listen to this episode. We talk about how, you know, she did watch some of 30 Rock, but not all of it, but didn't see the series finale. But even if she had, we would have forgotten about it because it was really a forgettable finale when you look at it. So, yeah.
I feel like I have some good ideas for ones that you should do. Everyone does. That's the beauty of this show, actually.
Six Feet Under.
Everybody, yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Really?
Well, yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Well, I believe that one. I'm pretty sure we've both seen 6 Feet Under. But the trick is finding the Venn diagram between shows that she hasn't watched, shows I have watched. Yeah. But everybody, 6 Feet Under is one of the most popular last episodes of a TV show.
I'll never forget
it.
It
all pales in comparison to the greatest last episode of any TV show of MASH, which was the best one of all time.
Okay.
Has she seen that?
I think so. I don't know. I gotta see. We'll find out.
I guess, yes. So don't spoil any surprises.
Please subscribe and find out.
There we go. All right. Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Victor. Appreciate you, Victor.
No problem, man. Sorry I froze earlier.
Don't be sorry.
Oh,
own it.
Great. It was perfect. Own it. Yeah.
It was perfect.
I was going with the minimalist theme. You know, that's
like
popped
it.
Up a few times this
like
episode.
I like it.
Minimalism is in.
Yeah.
Look at what Verizon's trying to sell us, a Palm phone. That's minimal.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Victor.
And thanks for handling my spotty internet connection, Victor. Great work there.
Like magic. No one even knew until we started talking about it earlier. It's all good. Thank you for that, Victor. I should point out really quick, I mentioned on last week's Screensavers that I was going to do a review of the Sony Xperia XZ3. That would be actually impossible. I recorded that before I left on my vacation, which was a no technology vacation. So I didn't really think that thing through. So you'll be getting a review of this soon. I'm sorry it wasn't this episode like I promised. And you probably didn't even make it to the end of this episode to hear me say this, and you're still going to email me, and that's okay. I will politely reply to you about this. But anyways, review coming soon. You can find me all over the Twit Network on shows like Screensavers and New Screensavers and Tech News Weekly and everything here on twit.tv. That's what I do. And best ofs. We are actually working on best ofs right now. Yes, we have requirements like end of month to have certain things in check. So twit.tv/best of, if you want to submit any moments from any episodes that really stood out, that would be really helpful to me. And hey, there's Padre. Good to see him again. But do that, twit.tv/best of, and I would appreciate it. That is it for this week. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us emails at AAA@twit.tv. You can find us on Twitter at Android Show. Our Arena apps list with all apps that we've ever done in the arena can be found at twit.to/Android apps. Show notes and past episodes can be found at twit.tv/AAA. That is our show page on the web. That is where you're going to find everything that you need to know, including the time that we record, Tuesdays, 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. If you want to tune in live, you can do that. And if you want to sit in the studio, you can do that too. Tickets at twit.tv. I think I've said all the things. So that's it. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Get some sleep, Mateo.